From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
And now they're past the 8th ball, and it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire victorious in the Vosburg, 1-3.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner in the filly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose all the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish.
She dares the devil, strikes the front of the eighth pole. Swiss Skydiver's trying hard, but she's still second. Not today for Gamine. It is She Dares the Devil turning back Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, and all the rest. She Dares the Devil scores in the Oaks.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning. On this 24th day of October, welcome to the Equine Forum, the show that launched a network here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you just 13 days, 4 hours, and 28 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Of course, you're listening to this show throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or you're tuned in digitally with our live streaming or the podcast of the show on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, as the attention of the racing world continues to shift toward the Breeders' Cup, and rightfully so, there's still plenty of other racing news to talk about on this Saturday morning. The 35th Maryland Million Program takes place this afternoon at Laurel. Going to be joined in just a few minutes by owner Dan Mason, who is also a colleague of ours here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He'll be with me at 8:15 Eastern Time as he prepares to watch two of his horses compete on this Maryland Million Day. It's a big deal. Can't wait to visit with Dan and talk to him about those horses and about his lifetime in this sport as an owner. He has been involved for a very, very long time and should be a fun visit. Keeneland brings down the curtain on what has been a very unique fall meet, to say the least. That fall meet wraps up today. Of course, racing will return here for the Breeders' Cup, as I mentioned, in just about 13 days. And that means that racing here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky is going to shift 72 miles west to Churchill Downs, which will kick off their 131st fall meet with the first of two Stars of Tomorrow cards that begins tomorrow. 11 races, all for two-year-olds. That is an awesome concept. They've been doing that for a very long time, and it is a fun thing to watch. And the first time this year, by the way, that spectators will be allowed to attend the races at Churchill Downs, albeit in a limited capacity of about 40%, which you think of the size of Churchill Downs, that's a decent number. That's a pretty decent number, considering we couldn't have any fans in attendance at the Kentucky Derby back in early September. That's a step in the right direction. And only certain areas are going to be open, but we'll have about 40% capacity at Churchill beginning tomorrow with their fall meet. Darren Rogers, the Director of Communications at Churchill, going to wrap up the show with me at 9:40 Eastern Time to look ahead to that meet and give you more insight as to what you can expect if you are thinking about trying to get out to the races at Churchill, how you can go about doing it, the areas that will be open for spectators. He'll fill you in on all of that at 9:40 Eastern Time. So I'm going to begin the show talking about Maryland Million with Dan Mason and wrap it up looking ahead to the Churchill Fall Meet with Darren Rogers. In between, I'll welcome in Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron to look back on Tisnow's brilliant victories in not one but two Breeders' Cup Classics. I thought that was appropriate on this Saturday morning as it was announced this past week that the only horse ever to win the Classic twice, Tisnow, has officially been retired from stud duty. And, you know, it happens on the 20-year anniversary of his first Classic victory in 2000. That came at Churchill Downs. Of course, the following year at Aqueduct, just 6 weeks after the September 11th attacks on our country, Tom Durkin provided one of the most memorable calls in the history of our sport. "Tis now wins it for America." And Chris will look back on those two wins, and he'll talk about what that was like coming into the 2001 Breeders' Cup after everything that had happened. There was talk that the Breeders' Cup could be canceled that year. I can remember that. But the sport and sports in general persevered, and the Breeders' Cup was indeed held. Again, 6 weeks after those September 11th attacks, it was held in New York. And Chris was the man who was in the spotlight at the end after guiding Tisnow to that huge win. He'll be with me at 8:35 Eastern. Looking forward to catching up with Chris. Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strip is going to be with me at 9 o'clock Eastern time. He always has a lot of great things to tell you about their products. And Canadian Hall of Famer Josie Carroll with me at 9:20. This is cool. I don't know, to be honest with you, I don't know if this has gotten the attention it deserves. You know, think about it. If we had a horse, if let's say Tis the Law, for example, this year, would have won the Kentucky Derby and been going for a Triple Crown in the Preakness, albeit with everything being shuffled around, there would be a lot of hoopla. There would be a lot of attention. I don't know if this is getting the attention it deserves. I'm going to make sure it does this morning. Josie Carroll, who has, you know, she's a Canadian Hall of Famer. She has done so much, so many good things in her career. Today, she stands on the doorstep of history with Mighty Heart. Mighty Heart looks to become just the eighth horse to sweep the Canadian Triple Crown. Think about that. We have had 13 Triple Crown winners in the U.S., and we talk about how difficult the Triple Crown is to accomplish. Although, you know, American Pharoah, Justify come along, and they win it, not consecutive years, but they win it in a very short time frame from each other. And you start thinking, okay, now you start to hear the talk, you know, is the Triple Crown too easy? Do we need to make some changes? Yeah, no, leave it alone. 13 Triple Crown winners in the U.S. There have only been 7 in Canada. The last to do it was Wando back in 2003. And today at Woodbine, the final leg of that Triple Crown, the Breeders' Stakes, 1.5 miles on the turf. And Mighty Heart is the even money morning line favorite, but they're going to take their shots at Mighty Heart. A field of 12 lined up for that Breeders' Stakes later today. Here's the deal. Take a look at the two Triple Crowns. Let's put them side by side for a minute. And the past several years, we've had the privilege to go to Woodbine and broadcast the first leg of their Triple Crown, the Queen's Plate. It is one of the great trips that we make all year long. And hopefully things get back to normal. We can get back there again next year. But the distances of both Triple Crowns, the American Triple Crown, the U.S. Triple Crown, and the Canadian Triple Crown, are the same. All three races are the same distances. But the major difference is that in the U.S., yeah, you go to three different racetracks, just like you do in Canada. But all three legs of the Triple Crown here are on dirt, on the main track. In Canada, that's not the case. You have to win three races. You have to do them at three different tracks. And you have to do it on three different surfaces. The Queen's Plate is run on Tapeta. The Prince of Wales Stakes at Fort Erie is on the main track on dirt. And then you come back to the 1.5 mile Breeder Stakes on the turf at Woodbine to wrap it up. So that leads me to my poll question for today. With the three, well, let's put it this way. The three races in the Triple Crown Series in the U.S. and Canada are all contested at the same distances. However, the U.S. Triple Crown is all on dirt, whereas the Canadian Triple Crown requires a horse to win on three different surfaces. So which is more difficult to accomplish, the U.S. Triple Crown or the Canadian Triple Crown? Give you two choices there. I want to know your thoughts. And poor Chauncey having to formulate that poll question on Twitter. I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's pretty good with that stuff. So one more time. The three Triple Crown races in the U.S. and in Canada are both contested in both countries are contested same distances. However, in the U.S., all on dirt. In Canada, you have to win on three different surfaces. Which is more difficult to accomplish, the U.S. Triple Crown or the Canadian Triple Crown? And I'll tell you, I think it has to be the Canadian Triple Crown. Forget about the fact that, yeah, we've had 13 winners here in the U.S. and only 7 in Canada. But asking a horse to win at those distances at three tracks at three different on three different surfaces, it has to be the Canadian Triple Crown. I'd be curious to see what you think. Let me know at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, another way to cast your vote. If you want to email the show, you can always email me your opinion on that, mike@horseracingradio.net. But I thought on this day when Mighty Heart goes for the Triple Crown in Canada, I thought that was appropriate. And, you know, Josie Carroll, her lone win in the Breeders' Stakes came in 2014 with Amiz Holiday. So it's not like she has had a ton of success in that race. She has in other races, the other Triple Crown races, but Mighty Heart dominated the Queen's Plate, came back and rolled through the Prince of Wales, and looks to be the real deal. And she has said over the course of the past several days that this is a very talented horse, and I look forward to catching up with her to talk about Mighty Heart and that Triple Crown bid later in the program. So here you go. Let's reset it for you. Dan Mason coming up in just a few minutes after my first commercial break. He'll talk about today's Maryland Million. Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron right around 8:35 Eastern time. Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Strips will be with me at 9 o'clock. Josie Carroll, 9:20. And Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs, 9:40. It is a full show. It kicks off next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
Will take charge of late drop. Oh, that's close. Mucho, Macho Man. The more they ask, the more he gave.
Only on HRRN.
10Day Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Watch, wager, win. Celebrate the Keeneland Fall Meet by joining Keeneland Select, Keeneland's mobile betting platform, where you can watch live racing and bet from your phone or computer. New signups in October receive a special $50 bonus after you wager $100 on Keeneland Racing this month with promo code FALL20. This is on top of the standard Keeneland Select $100 signup bonus. Join today and start wagering at KeenelandSelect.com.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Midpoint on the turn, Jarvis Steel factor it in, just a neck behind, they turn in almost together, and it's Tempt Me twice in third position, Coop tries harder in fourth, and Love You Much is in fifth, into the stretch now, about a quarter of a mile left to go, Jarvis Steel turning back, factor it in, Tempt Me twice on the inside, Coop tries harder, Love You Much in the far outside, here comes Coop tries harder between horses, and Tempt Me twice, they're coming fast now after Jarvis Steel, Love You Much on the far outside too, Love You Much, Coop tries harder, Tempt Me twice, three-way go, it's going to be a three-way finish. Love You Much. Love You Much. Coop tries harder and Tempt Me twice.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Dave Rodman of the call of Love You Much winning an allowance race. That was back in 2019 in August. Winless since, but looking to break that streak later today. The six-year-old gelded son of Not For Love, hoping to break through for our good friend Dan Mason as he joins me now here on HRRN. Dan, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. God, do I miss you guys. I mean, we ever going to be back to normal where we get our whole team back on the field?
Boy, wouldn't that be nice. You know, I mentioned that at the top of the show. Not only are you a longtime racehorse owner, but you and I have been friends for many years, and you are now part of our Horse Racing Radio Network crew. And, boy, it would be nice to get the band back together again, I can tell you that.
Well, maybe someday that'll happen. But, you know, it adds so much to the product when we have everybody contributing. And I look forward to it. And, God, with you and Kirk and the rest of the team, I mean, we've had Bobby. I mean, we've had a lot of laughs and a lot of fun. And, gosh, you don't know how much you miss it till you don't do it anymore, you know.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You have the distinct pleasure of watching a couple of your horses run on the Maryland Million program today at Laurel. And we just heard the call of Love You Much winning that allowance race. That, again, was in August of last year. Got up to win by a neck. And since that time, Dan has been knocking on the door right there and just unable to crack through. What's the key to victory for Love You Much today?
Well, I think he has to stay out of trouble. You know, he got in traffic a couple of times. But the thing about Love You Much is this horse, you know, we always kind of get a kick out of the horse we talk about a lot, Count on Lou, if you remember him back way back when. But this yeah. horse tries all the time. He's always there. And some of the handicappers pick him second or third. And there's a horse from New York coming in here named Faya. That is going to be the favorite today in that particular race. But you can count on Love You Much. He's just an honest, honest horse. He's never going to cheat, and he's the same horse he is in the morning as the same horse he is in the afternoon. And I look forward to it. I really think he's got a great shot to win. But you know horse racing, Mike. I'll tell you a funny story, and I know you're going to recall this. Remember we had in one of the Maryland Million races last year, no knock raid, and he's back in today. But last year, he was coming down this stretch. It was a soft turf, and he was up by about three, and he hit a muddy, soggy patch on the turf on the rail and practically stopped and ended up finishing fifth, I think. But, Mike, I had one foot in the winner's circle. We already were going to get off the air so we could go get the trophy. I mean, I had it planned out in my mind, but that's horse racing, my friend.
Yeah, far more ways to lose a horse race than there are to win one. There's only one way to win. You have to get your nose in front at the wire, and that's, of course, what you're hoping for with Love You Much and No Knock Raid later today. Love You Much, by the way, is in the sixth race of the day at Laurel. That is the Maryland Million Turf Sprint, 5.5 furlongs on the turf course, and then we'll see No Knock Raid in the final race of the day, which I believe is a starter handicap. So you kind of... You almost got him surrounded, Dan, later today.
I'm far cry from that, Mike, but it's going to be a good day. The weather's beautiful here today, and the turf will be firm, no doubt. And both horses like that. Although Love You Much, he doesn't mind a yielding course either. But No Knock Raid from previous races just hates a yielding course or a soft turf course. But it's going to be a good day. I mean, it's unfortunate that I believe they only limit it to 250 spectators, which is crazy when you got thousands of people that facility is built for. And they let the owners come in with like a party of four. You can do that. But it's just, you know, maybe 2021 we'll be back where the people can come to the racetrack and enjoy it. But it's a beautiful day, that's for sure.
Will you be going out to the races today, Dan?
I will. And I will be going and taking a couple of my friends. And
good.
Hopefully the Love You Much and No Knock Raid contingent will be heard because there won't be a lot of people in the stands. That's for sure.
Talking with Dan Mason, our colleague here on the Horse Racing Radio Network and, of course, owner of he's owned racehorses for many, many years. Dan, take me back to almost the beginning, I guess, if you will, and talk to me about how you first got involved with racing and then owning racehorses. Where did that interest come from?
Well, I've been going to racetracks since I was 4 years old. I'm from Louisville, and Dad took me. So I would just run around the racetrack at Churchill Downs and pick up tickets off the ground, you know, that people would discard, head to the top of the grandstand and start looking for winners, which I would always find. Every time I'd go, I'd get a winner. Wouldn't be a lot, but I'd have enough to keep me an ice cream for a week. But I would go, and as I grew older, you know, you grow up in a family that loves races and racetracks, and if I could afford a horse, I did, and first horse I ever owned ran at Ellis Park. And then, you know, you get burnt out sometimes on it over many, many years, and you take a break, and then it's like you always come back. But I think as a racehorse owner, what you have to do, there's two rules. You never spend more on a horse than you can afford to lose. And then the other rule is you have to be willing to accept the peaks and valleys of the sport. And, boy, those peaks, let me tell you, if one of my horses ran today, I'm going to enjoy that peak because, you know, I have to keep an even keel when we get to the valleys. And that happens a lot in this business, as horse owners know. But, you know, it's all about sportsmanship, and it's about fun, and it's hopefully about bringing other people along with you to enjoy the day. It's a lot more fun when you've got a group there rather than just one person.
Yeah, you've been able to do that several times. I know that I've been there with you when you've had horses running. You mentioned no-knock raid last year, but you're big on that. You love to invite, when we could invite people, you love to invite as many people as you can, and even if they can't necessarily come to the winner's circle with you because of limitations on the number of people or whatever it might be, at least they get to experience what the sport's all about, and you've always been a great ambassador in that respect.
I do. I enjoy people smiling, having fun, and the sense of winning. Mike, I'll tell you a real quick story. That the first date I ever took my wife at was at Laurel Park, and my trainer had a horse in that day. The horse was about 15-1. I didn't think it had a shot, but the trainer said, "You know what, you guys? If this horse wins, I want you to go to the winner's circle." I said, "Great," and my wife, now girlfriend, then said, "Oh, that would be fun. The horse wins." And I'm dragging her to the winner's circle. She goes, "Oh, I don't own the horse. I can't go in there." I said, "Sure you can. It's all about people having fun." So, you know, it's not bad for a first date to end up in the winner's circle at Laurel, huh?
Yeah, it was meant to be after that, right?
Yeah, yeah. We've been married close to 15 years now.
Yeah, spectacular. Great stuff. Dan Mason, I'm going to brag on you for a minute. Dan, former president of CBS Radio and a member of the Radio Hall of Fame. He has had a lot of success on the business side of this game. And now, of course, involved with thoroughbred racehorses as he has been. You heard him talk about his passion for it since he was very, very young, growing up in Louisville. Dan, when I first met you, you talked about Count on Lou. He was kind of your big horse at that point, going back to about 2012 or 13, I guess it was. And you've had other ones, too. You've had horses like Mindy Michelle comes to mind. I think Changing of the Guard was another one that you owned. Tell me about some of the other ones that stand out to you.
Oh, my gosh, Mike. I would have some that I'd only be able to keep a couple of races, and they would get claimed from me right away. You recall Mindy Michelle? She was a nice filly. Ended up getting claimed, of course, which is okay. I mean, it's part of the game. But another one that would be always consistent, always trying. Changing of the Guard, you mentioned, and she was a flighty filly, but she'd always have to saddle up outside the paddock. But she had a whirlwind bunch of speed. I think she made about $250,000 through a few owners. But you know, somehow you just remember all the good ones. You don't really remember the ones that weren't so good. Maybe I'm blocking them out. And Mike, there have been, I bet over the course of, 30 years, I bet I have owned 50 different horses. And I do remember some catchy names, but the ones that stand out are the ones that you know are the hard-knocking, trying horses. So, again, you know, on those peaks, I'm right there enjoying love and life.
One thing you've always been big on, Dan, throughout your time at CBS and this whole Hall of Fame radio career, is relationships. And you are excellent at not only establishing relationships with people, but keeping those relationships. And you have a long-standing relationship with your trainer, Ferris Allen, who is the trainer of both horses running on that Maryland Million program today. Tell me about that relationship and how that came about and why it's been so successful.
I think when I first met Ferris, I'd called the racing office at Laurel or Pimlico or whoever was open at the time, and I'd ask them to recommend the trainer, and they recommended Ferris. And he's about my age. He went to law school at William & Mary. Incredibly bright guy. And, you know, we understand each other. I mean, we kind of win together, we lose together, one of those kind of deals. But, you know, a lot of owners will change trainers, like the Daily Water or something. But I've never done that. I've had other trainers. Some I liked up more than others, but Ferris, we've been together since like the early 90s maybe, or late 80s. But, you know, it's if you believe in a trainer and you believe in a person, no matter what business you're in, you ride that person till the end of the beach. You know, let that wave come all the way up to the beach. And you don't switch horses in the middle of the wave. You don't. It's just not good business. And so when I find somebody or a company or somebody that I like to do business with, I don't change. It would take a lot to make me change. And I've kind of operated with that principle, whether it's people who work for me or whether people that are companies that I hire. If they do a good job and they're honest, hardworking, I just don't change. I'm consistent that way.
Love you much in the sixth. Today, no knock grade in the 12th. Both of those part of the Maryland Million Day program at Laurel Park and visiting with Dan Mason on HRN. Dan, are you still going to want to work with us on radio after you become an Academy Award-winning actor?
I'll always work with you guys. I love that relationship, and I love the people. I love the laughs. I love the going to the racetrack. I love going out to dinners the night before. I love going into the casino with Mike Benham being my bad luck. So, yeah, of course I will, Mike. You know, as long as there's a place for me, I'll be there.
But we stopped that train at Gulfstream that day, right? You were on a roll. You were winning every time you went to the machines, and I went in to watch you play, and I don't think you were ever ahead in that half hour I watched you.
Yeah, Michelle was cursing you because I was going to buy dinner with my winnings, so I didn't have any winnings, so I didn't buy dinner. So it's fun, though.
Yeah, I was cheering for you to win, believe me. I was definitely
cheering
for you to win.
Mike, what's your favorite track that we have been to? Or what's your favorite memory of our team? Of course, we won the Eclipse Award, but there's other things. I'd like to know from your standpoint, what are some of your favorite flashbacks when we had the team together?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, in terms of the racetracks, Dan, I'm always partial to Saratoga because that's where I grew up, and people know I cut my teeth on racing at Saratoga. I remember going there with my friends and sitting at the picnic tables alongside the top of the stretch there. So from a racetrack perspective, I think, you know, Saratoga always does it for me. I think Santa Anita is a beautiful racetrack. Sitting there looking at the San Gabriel Mountains, one of the great backdrops in all of racing. To me, Santa Anita is gorgeous. Yeah, and in terms of the memories, I think just like you said, being on the road, the camaraderie, all of that, you know, that comes along with putting these shows together, you know, getting to travel to different locations. I'll tell you, Barbados, getting the opportunity to go there and broadcast the Gold Cup a couple of years was spectacular. And the way we were treated when we went there was just incredible. So any of those types of things really stand out. You know, all of the accolades and stuff are great, but that's just a byproduct of, you know, of getting the band back together and doing things the way we feel are the right way to do them. So,
you know, I'll give you one that stands out to me.
Cool.
I think my number one favorite memory was when we were at Del Mar for Breeders' Cup and sharing that Airbnb and bathroom with Jude and Sean. And I was like, that was the last.
But I've tried to block
that
one
really
out.
Good time. I thought we had a great broadcast that day. And, of course, the people at Del Mar were nice. We had a really nice facility there that we broadcast from. So I think that one, until that one gets topped, that will stand out in my mind.
Well, listen, let's make some more memories this afternoon on that Maryland Million Day card. Go get them, Dan. Love you much. No knock raid. Let's get to the winner's circle twice today, my friend.
Keep your eye on me, Mike.
We will. All right. Appreciate it. Dan Mason here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace your passion, wear what you love, at embracetherace.com. You heard me ask him about his acting career. He has gotten into doing some acting now, too, in addition to being part of our team on radio. Now that he's retired from CBS, he's dabbling in a little bit of that, and I wanted to get into it, that with him a little bit more, but didn't get a chance to, but hopefully he's in the winner's circle today with those two horses at Laurel. All right, still to come, Chris McCarron will be with me in the next segment. He's going to look back on the 20-year anniversary of Tisnow's first Breeders' Cup Classic win, and of course that second one, that memorable one in 2001, the only horse to win the Breeders' Cup Classic twice. I'll talk to Chris coming up in just a little bit. Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Strips at 9 o'clock. Josie Carroll going for the Triple Crown today at Woodbine, 9:20 Eastern, and Darren Rogers at 9:40. That's all ahead right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday morning at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
Shortly before 4 p.m. on October 18, 1952, seven thoroughbreds from around the world answered the call to post for the first-ever Laurel International at Laurel Racecourse in suburban Washington, D.C. And there was a solid, noteworthy feel on hand to contend for the top honors. Niederlander from Germany had Obi Skurlock in the irons, and he came into the race as the winner of the German Derby of 1950. Indian Hemp from Canada was the only three-year-old in the race, and was therefore in the receipt of 6 pounds from the others while having the services of the redoubtable Johnny Longden in the irons. Will Win, an English Invader by Pink Flower out of Saracen by Donatel II, was to be ridden by Emmanuel Mercer. Zucchero, another English Invader piloted by Cheeky Charlie Smith. Rui from America and the most highly regarded of the three American horses in the field had the services of Johnny Adams. Greek Ship from the Brookmead stable had Heady Eddie Arcaro up. Palater, the Pride of Maryland, was the third American entry. John D. Shapiro, the Laurel president who dreamed of the actuality of the race, was about to see his dream unfold. At the start, which went off without a hitch, Zucchero went to the front, but rider Charlie Smith took him back off the pace, allowing Indian Hemp, the Canadian three-year-old, to go to the front to set the fractions for the first half mile. Johnny Longden, born in Canada and aboard the Canadian Vader, was a noted master at controlling the pace of a race on the front end. And as they went past the half, Greek Ship moved up along the fence to take the lead, and the German champion Niederlander moved with him on the outside to make it a troika up front, dueling for control. Then Greek Ship and Niederlander pulled away from Indian Hemp, and those two were heads apart going to the far turn, matching powerful strides. Greek Ship was the first to give way while the rest of the field began to close ground and bunch up as they swung around the turn in what was rapidly becoming a superb horse race. Zucchero and Will Win were moving fastest of all as they came to the top of the stretch, where the cagey Englishman, Emmanuel Mercer, got Will Win down along the inside to save ground to get to the front. As they came pounding down the lane, the Hasty House Farms' Rui, one of the American entrants, came flying down the middle of the racetrack with a wily veteran Adams putting all his skills to use to get the last possible ounce of run out of his mount. It was too little, too late. Wilwin crossed the wire, a two-length winner, Rui second, Zucchero third, then came Niederlander, Pallaster, Greek Ship, and the fully spent early pace setter Indian Hemp. Arcaro, who rode Greek Ship, said after the race, quote, "No excuses. Those other horses just ran on by me too fast. I'd have given my right arm to win this race, but my mount ran one of his poorest races," unquote. Manny Mercer, the winning rider, was beside himself when he leaped off to hug his mount in the winner's circle. He had ridden a perfect race, keeping his mount off the pace in sixth place in the early going, allowing the early speed to kill each other off, then deftly driving through along the fence, turning for home. During the presentation ceremony, Will Win was accorded a huge ovation by the crowd, and that cheering continued on in a great display of international sportsmanship. That October day in 1952 at Laurel in Maryland, and the running of the very first international, indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince is value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Churchill Downs begins their 131st fall meet this Sunday with the first of two Stars of Tomorrow programs, featuring 11 races, all for promising two-year-olds, and a first post of 1 p.m. Eastern. Sunday's opener will mark the first time this year that spectators can return to Churchill Downs for live racing, with attendance limited to 40% capacity and only select premium areas open. Further information can be found at churchilldowns.com. In total, 10 stakes races offering purses of nearly $1.8 million. Big money, big fields. October 25th to November 29th at Churchill Downs.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the field turns for home. Here comes the arc winner, Saki, and he storms to the lead. Saki in their lead, and Tiz now is doubling on the American Horse of the Year. And the arc winner are heads apart with a furlong to go in the Classic. On the outside, Saki, Tiz now fights on. Here's the wire, desperately close. Tiz now wins it for America, beating Saki right on the wire. Finishing third with Albert the Great. Mark Alma was fourth. Oh, did they deliver a thriller here at Belmont Park this afternoon. An heroic stretch drive that will go on in Breeders' Cup legend.
Yeah, what a day. What a performance by Tiz Now, the only two-time winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic, and that was win number two. You heard Tom Durkin with the call. That was at Belmont Park in 2001. He won it the previous year in 2000, but the one in 2001, emotional for a lot of reasons. It had come just 6 weeks after the September 11th attacks on our country, and it happened right there in New York. And there was talk that maybe the Breeders' Cup wouldn't be held that year. I remember a lot of the conversation surrounding sports in general was that maybe sports should take a respite and not be held for quite some time. But as we started to get back to some sense of normalcy, sports became an integral part of our culture, and that was certainly one of them. And that performance by Tiz Now will live in our memories forever. And Tiz Now ridden both times in the Breeders' Cup by Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron, who joins me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chris, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on, pal.
Yeah, appreciate the visit. You know, let's just heard the call of that race in 2001. It was much more than a horse race. Put me there with you. What were the days like leading into that race and then, of course, the race itself?
Yeah, there was a lot of tension in the air, obviously. One of the most vivid recollections I have is before the races began, they had all the jockeys get dressed up in their colors that they were going to be using for the day, the owner's colors. And we paraded from the jockey's room down through the tunnel at Belmont Park and across the track onto the turf course. And we were all carrying American flags, little American flags, and we all had hats on that either said FDNY or NYPD to salute the frontline heroes of the tragedy. And as we got across onto the turf course and turned around, looked up at the grandstand, and for the length, the whole length of the Belmont Grandstand, which we all know is enormous, about every 50 yards or so, there was a soldier with a rifle, snipers, if you will. And that was a very alarming view, and I'll never forget it. It's still vivid in my mind now. And we all knew the gravity of the situation, how serious everything was. But that vivid memory is will forever be etched in my mind, and it was quite alarming. So it was weird because it was alarming and feeling better about the situation too, because we know we were being protected. But it was quite the day. That's how my day started off, and fortunately, because of the great heart that Tisnow has, he finished the day off for us really well.
I think that's the right way to put it, Chris. And by the way, fantastic recollection there. But, you know, I think that's the right way to put it, the heart and determination that Tisnow showed in defeating the great European in Saki and getting up to win by a nose. And at one point in the stretch, it looked as if Tisnow was done, but somehow he gutted it out and found a way to get his nose in front. And Tom Durkin summed it up perfectly, winning it for America. There was so much national pride, not just with horse racing, but around the country. That when he's coming down the stretch and he's in that battle, do you remember exactly what was going through your mind and how intense that must have been?
Yeah, I remember what was going on through my mind. I told Jay Robbins, his trainer, in the paddock before the race that I wasn't going to hit him with the stick. I was just going to ride him and coax him along because he was training in what I refer to as an obstreperous fashion. He was leading up to the race. He was doing things the way he wanted to do them, and without regard to what the exercise boy Ruben was trying to get him to do. Tisnow has a very, very strong will and strong mind, and he would go out there and do whatever the heck he wanted to do. And most of the time, it was to walk down to the track slow fashion, take everything in, get on the track, look around for a while, and he wouldn't go and train until he was absolutely ready for it. And when I breezed him a mile a week before the Breeders' Cup, we were at Santa Anita. He had not shipped back to New York yet. And I was instructed by Jay Robbins to breeze him a mile. Well, he wouldn't go for about 40 minutes. He just stood on the track, didn't do anything wrong. He just wouldn't go forward. And he finally had enough sightseeing while he was out there and decided to go ahead and go. And when he did, he went. Boy, he breezed a mile and 36 and change, going from the half-mile pole all the way back around to the half-mile pole. And horses just don't breeze that fast in that particular configuration. When they go from wire to wire doing a mile, yeah, they finish very well. But typically when they pass the finish line, they start gearing down. But Tisnow did not do that. He just kept on running. And so knowing that he's got this strong will, he doesn't want to be forced into doing anything, I was up there as a passenger just trying to coax him along. And at the 16th pole, Saki was a good neck in front of me. And I figured I've got nothing left to lose. So I reached back and I tapped him once with my left hand. And he responded favorably. He jumped forward and was able to get back in front and drop his head down right at the right time. That was that's an event I will never, ever forget.
I don't like when guests come on the show and use bigger words than me, Chris. Obstreperous? I love it.
Not bad for a jockey, huh?
Pretty good. Did you know that you had the race won at that point? Did you feel confident that your nose was in front?
I could feel him trying, and I couldn't really tell, but I did hear the call. I was able to hear Tom Durkin say Tisnow wins it for America, and so I began the celebration in earnest right away, just galloping out. I was giving him a big old pat on the neck and everything, and I wasn't 100% sure because I had my head buried and I was down driving, but I had a good feeling about it. And then when I heard I had a good feeling about it because of the response I was getting from you know, the effort that he was putting out. And but when I heard Tom say that, and he's about as good as they get when it comes to deciding who, he could have made a very skilled placing judge if he wanted to, because he was very good at determining who the winner was.
Did you hear him say Tisnow wins it for America?
I did. I heard him say that. Yeah. And
wow.
Then my confidence with regard to the photo swelled, and so it's amazing how what you hear out there and what you don't hear when you focus, and you know, sometimes you're easily distracted, and other times you're just geared down on the focus for the race. And but that particular time, I did hear him. It was pretty loud. And it was a great feeling.
People will forget that Tisnow was not the favorite in that race as the defending champion. It was actually Aptitude under Jerry Bailey, who went postward as the favorite in that 2001 Breeders' Cup. The year before, Tisnow wins it for the first time at Churchill Downs. He wasn't the favorite that year either. You wrote him, he was 9-1. And again, another gutsy effort. He battled with another top European in Giants Causeway, and he gets up to win by a neck. I guess you had to be thinking at that point, man, this horse is special.
Oh yeah, he showed me how special he was when he won the first Breeders' Cup Classic, because he didn't break his maiden until May of that year. He broke his maiden in May at Hollywood Park in a maiden special weight race, came back next time out and ran super in the I think it was the Affirmed Handicap, and then in the Swap Stakes as well, ran very well. Victor Espinoza rode him in those races. Actually, Alex Solis broke his maiden, but Victor rode him a couple of times, and Victor was committed to another horse. I forget the horse's name at this point, for the Pacific Classic, and Jay asked me to ride him, and I had breezed him a couple of times in the morning, so I was somewhat familiar with him. But he goes on after he breaks his maiden. He wins a stake. He's third in a stake. He's second in the Pacific Classic. And then he goes down to Louisiana and wins the Super Derby, comes back to Santa Anita, wins the Goodwood, and then journeyed back to Churchill Downs. And what a tremendous amount of fortitude the horse showed throughout that training and racing process. He was an iron horse, and I know that's what they call Giants Causeway, but if I ever rode an iron horse, it was Tisnow.
Yeah, Chris McCarron with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Hall of Famer looking back on Tisnow's two victories in the Breeders' Cup Classic, 2000 and 2001, respectively. The only horse ever to win the Breeders' Cup Classic twice. Chris, when you look up the leaders among jockeys in the Breeders' Cup Classic, your name and Jerry Bailey's name are at the top of the list. You each have won that race five different occasions. Your first in 1988, and then the last one coming in 2001. With Tisnow, but that first one with Ali Sheba in 88, I know you and I have talked about it multiple times. That was as special a victory as you've ever had.
Oh, yes, without question. Yeah, I'm very blessed, that's for sure, to have ridden five classic winners. Ali Sheba was a very, very special horse for me and for the racing public. When he won... when he won the classic, Tom had another great call that afternoon, and it was getting really dark too. Boy, it was very, very dark all the way around the track. And but Ali Sheba was very special for sure. And I also had, if I may toot my horn a little bit, I also had 3 seconds in the race as well. And so I
how'd you get those horses beat?
Came close to winning that thing 8 times.
Yeah, how'd you get the other 3 beat, Chris? Come on.
Oh, that's a good question. I was second on on Ali Sheba in 87. Ferdinand beat him. I was second on Twilight Agenda, I think, in 91 behind Black Tie Affair. And second in 85 on Gate Dancer behind the horse at Georgia. Proud Truth. Proud Truth.
Proud
yeah.
Truth, yeah. Proud Truth. John Veitch.
That's correct. And Georgie Velasquez for Darby Dan Farm.
Yeah, you know, we talk about this being the 20-year anniversary of Tisnow's first Breeders' Cup Classic win. This is the 25-year anniversary of Cigar's huge win at Belmont Park, and Tom Dirk's call that people will remember forever. But the following and wrote Alphabet Soup to knock off Cigar at Woodbine. What do you remember about that day?
Yeah, it was a cold, kind of a nasty day. The weather was inclement, and the my family had traveled with me from Los Angeles to Toronto. And I had a lot of really good chances that day. I remember I was loaded for bear, and I thought, you know, when I was going over the form the morning of the race, I thought I got a chance to win three or four of these things this afternoon. It didn't pan out. And then I was getting a little frustrated as we got closer to the classic, and you know, got to where I said, well, I've only got one more chance here. Let's make this thing happen. And Ali Sheba, I mean, Alphabet Soup was a very, very nice horse, but he was like a bicycle. If you weren't pedaling, he wasn't going forward. So I started riding him pretty vigorously at the 5/8 pole after we turned down the backside just to maintain my position. And when Cigar ranged up on my outside, I was losing ground. But when I saw it was Cigar on my outside, I thought, well, I might be losing some ground, but he's losing more than I am. So we had a pretty good chance at the head of the stretch, and Alphabet Soup just put his head down. He beat the Preakness winner, Louis Quatorze, was second in the race, and Cigar, of course, was third. But very, very exciting day, and it was a fun weekend, too. I took my family to Niagara Falls for the first time, and it's one thing that riding horses and racing has done for me. I got to see some wonderful parts of this country and the world because of the travels my career would take me on. But Alphabet Soup got the job done that afternoon.
Well, Chris, I can tell you, and I know I've told you this publicly before, but I'll say it again. As I was getting into racing and growing up, I had two favorite jockeys, Mike Smith and Chris McCarron. And you have always, and Mike too, have always been so generous with your time when I call you and ask you to come on the program. And this has been a fantastic trip down memory lane looking back on those Breeders' Cup Classic victories, just part of what has made you such a great Hall of Fame rider, and really appreciate the visit. It's always so much fun and never, never obstressorous to do an interview with you.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. And I should bite my tongue before I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. The Steelers have a lot better chance this year than the Patriots do. So if we can't
yeah, exactly.
win it, I like that organization, and I hope they continue to do well for you. I know you're a huge supporter of the Pittsburgh Steelers, so go Steelers.
I love – wow. Save that on tape right there. Chris McCarron, ladies and gentlemen. Chris, appreciate the visit, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me. Take care, everybody.
All right. Wow, Chris McCarron just said go Steelers on my – you know, I remember a few years ago we did an interview in the studio, and the Steelers and the Patriots were getting ready to play in a playoff game, I think it was, and Chris came in and all in his Patriots stuff, and, of course, I had – my Steelers stuff on because that's pretty much what I wear every day of the year. And got a great picture with Chris in the studio with the two of us together like that. And when I say that he's a great ambassador for the sport, he's a classy guy and he's done things the right way. And all of these things that you say about guys like Chris McCarron, like a Mike Smith, like a John Velasquez, any of these guys that are, you know, Ramon Dominguez, Javier Castellano, good family guys, class act. And the list goes on and on and on. There are so many great people in this sport, and Chris is certainly right there at the top of the list. Yeah, great memories, too, of the Breeders' Cup Classics. And Tiz now, if you just joined me, officially retired from stud duty at Windstar this past week. That was announced. And, you know, what a career for Tiz now at stud and on the racetrack. Gutsy horse, and as Chris called him, the iron horse for sure. All right, going to get to another break. I'll come back and get you set for the second half of the program. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5. Caraconti hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Sole Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Katil, and great winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream, value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caracanti at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
The Breeders' Cup runs here. HRRN is your home for over 25 hours of coverage during Breeders' Cup Week, leading up to our exclusive broadcast of the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Don't miss our countdown shows, race day radio, special Breeders' Cup editions of Trainer Talk, the Weekend Stakes Preview Show, and much more. Visit our website at horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of exclusive Breeders' Cup programming.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Smart Spree tried to cut the corner, but Chief Cicatriz on the outside has grabbed the lead and takes off with 3/16 to go, suddenly clear by four. Mr. Crow's on the wrong lead, trying to rally Wobo down toward the inside, but they're all chasing Chief Cicatriz by the 16th pole with a six-length lead. And this one will ramble home much the best in the Aristides. Chief Cicatriz by five in the end. Mr. Crow was second. Wobo was third. Awesome Saturday finished fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Pennant, Baron of the Backstretch, taking you through these couple of hours on this Saturday morning, the 24th day of October, 2020. 13 days away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships. That was Travis Stone with the call of the 2018 Aristides at Churchill Downs. Chief Cicatriz getting the victory in that one translates to Chief Scar. He actually has a scar on his shoulder, so it was appropriate that Chief Cicatriz would be the name of this very talented horse. He is a potential runner in this year's Breeders' Cup Sprint for trainer Sean Davis, who was my guest this past Wednesday night on Trainer Talk, which you can hear every Wednesday, presented by Fasig Tipton. And what a story Sean Davis has. And if you missed the show, I'm going to encourage you right now to head back over to our website at some point this weekend and check it out. Because you're talking about a guy in Sean Davis, 79 years old, and a three-time world champion saddle bronc rider. In 1979, he was inducted into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. He spent time working on the ranch of famed oil company executive and legendary horse breeder Nelson Bunker Hunt, and he's dined with late President Ronald Reagan on the White House lawn. Those just a few of the highlights from Sean Davis's resume. And we spent an hour on Trainer Talk looking back on his career as a saddle bronc rider, looking back on his involvement with racehorses and how that love began for him. It was a super entertaining hour, and his story is just fantastic. So after we finish up here or at some point this weekend, treat yourself to that trainer talk show presented by Fasic Tipton. It's on our website, horseracingradio.net, as are all of our podcasts. If you missed the Brisnet.com call-in show from this past week, you can head over and check that out. If you missed our Friday night weekend stakes preview, which is presented by Naira Betts with Bobby Newman and Anthony Stabile, walking through all the weekend's big races and sharing their selections, head over there and podcast that too and listen. HorseRacingRadio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, another way that you can access all of our shows. Well, I told you we're 13 days away from the Breeders' Cup, but not from our coverage, which will begin on the Tuesday before Breeders' Cup with the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows. Bobby Newman, Jude Feld will be with you for 2 hours, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning of Breeders' Cup week to get you set for all of the racing action. You'll hear interviews with owners and trainers and breeders and handicappers and jockeys. It's going to be a fun week of coverage, as it is every single year here on the network. And we are proud and privileged to be able to say that we have been the exclusive radio partner of the Breeders' Cup World Championships since 2007. 14 years and going strong, and really appreciate being part of that spectacular event and having it return to the Bluegrass here at Keeneland makes it even more special. All right, second half of the show kicks off with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Strips. That comes up next. Josie Carroll, the Canadian Hall of Famer, gets ready to saddle Mighty Heart in today's Breeder Stakes at Woodbine. She's going to be with me at 9:20 talking about going for the eighth Triple Crown in the history of Canadian racing later today. And Darren Rogers, the Director of Communications at Churchill, talks about their fall meet, which begins tomorrow. That's all ahead right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
But it's Improbable who has taken command with an authoritative run. From last to first, what a star Improbable has turned into, as he is going to romp in the awesome again.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And Honor AP runs right by Authentic. And Odor at the rail and Rushy, a 16th to go. Honor AP a length and a half. Authentic, Rushy running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Tom's Detour shaken up. Shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth. But with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's Detour.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum rolling on. Busy Saturday morning. First half of the show featured my interviews with owner and HRN colleague Dan Mason and with Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron. If you missed any portion, all you have to do is head back over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. Horseracingradio.net is the place to be. Well, the poll question today, which you are weighing in on our Twitter feed, and so many of you are taking the time to do that, and I appreciate it. With Mighty Heart going for the Triple Crown in Canada today, it would be just the eighth Triple Crown winner in the history of Canadian racing. We've had 13 here in the U.S. Which is more difficult to accomplish, the U.S. Triple Crown all run on the dirt or the Canadian Triple Crown run on three different surfaces? The distances are the same. It's the surfaces that change in Canada. So which is more difficult to accomplish, the U.S. Triple Crown, the Canadian Triple Crown? And right now, I'm actually really surprised by this result. 73% of HRN Nation saying it's the U.S. Triple Crown that's more difficult to accomplish. Well, I don't know. I think running on three different surfaces in those Triple Crown races makes it extremely difficult to pull off the feat. But I don't know. 73% of you saying it's the U.S. Triple Crown that's more difficult. We'll have to ask trainer Josie Carroll when she joins me at 9:20 Eastern time. But time now to welcome in my good friend, Dr. Jim Chiappetta, co-founder of Flair Strips, who has also been involved with another new project that we'll talk about here momentarily. But, Doc, first and foremost, I know you're up in the great state of Minnesota. Good morning, and happy to have you on board.
Hey, thanks, Mike. How are you?
I am well. How's everything, wherever the hell Minnesota is, how's everything up that way?
You know, I think, Mike, every time you and I talk, it's either during a blizzard or right after a blizzard, except when I was in Louisville for the Derby this year. So I want you to know we once again had a heavy snowfall early in the year. So as I look out on my bean fields, I still wonder why I'm living here.
I don't want to hear anything about snow on October 24th. How much snow did you get, Doc?
I think we got about 6 inches, but I assume you as a deer hunter need that once in a while.
Yeah, just a coating, and then it can go away right after deer season. I grew up in Massachusetts, so I've seen enough snow to last me a lifetime.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling here, too. I've seen plenty, so.
Well, Doc, listen, we're going to talk plenty about Flair here over the course of the next several minutes, but I do want to ask you about a new project that you became involved with. You launched something brand new at the Kentucky Derby. It's called Fanticipate, and we talked about it on this show. I promoted it a couple of times. I think it's a fantastic concept. How'd it go, and what's next for Fanticipate?
Well, Mike, we're pleased. We launched it at the Derby, and the goal was to put items from jockeys or horses that were going to be entered in the Derby, and particularly items that were used in the Derby, up for auction before the event occurred. And I think we had around 37 items went up. We had about 500 bidders on it. And so for our first run, we were very pleased with it. The whole goal is to bring fans in another way so that when those gates open and they see a horse come out, they own a little piece of that horse. And one anecdotal, I got a call from an executive who participated, and he's from the Minnesota United soccer team. And we had set it up so that there was bidding that went on from the up until about an hour before the gates closed. And then in that last hour, there was extended bidding only for those people who had participated in the earlier bidding. And while I'm not sure that was the smartest thing for us to do, because it took bidders out who wanted to swoop in the last minute and bid, it's something that's done on some auctions, and we were testing things. But he called me up irate because he actually was going to bid on Authentic's halter, and he hadn't bid earlier. He thought he'd swoop in at the last minute, and he said it didn't happen, and he said, I've never watched a Derby in my life, so pissed off. And that's what we wanted to do, is we wanted to energize people, get them engaged and enthused. So he said, you know, I stayed tuned in, and now I want to see what happens next. So, I you know, whenever you start a project like this, you pressure test things, and you try to figure out what the consumer wants, what people like. And so we're going to do the same thing at Breeders' Cup. We'll probably do some adjustments. We really want to focus there on items that jockeys put up and focus on the jockey. I always think of the jockeys, at least from our end, as the giants of this industry, and it would be great to focus on them as well as supporting more charities and the money that's raised through Fanticipate.
Well, you're not a website guy necessarily, Doc. You are a veterinarian by trade, and just kind of, are you practicing now?
Mike, I don't. I actually quit practicing many years ago, and I've been involved. I'm actually an attorney, and I figured the world didn't have enough of them, so I went back to law school. And spent my life in human medical product development. So I've worked for a company called Boston Scientific, where we made pacemakers and cardiovascular stents and devices for people with Parkinson's disease. And so I've spent a good chunk just working with the development and approval of human medical products, which is a fairly heavily regulated industry. Any product that gets put into patients, you have to have a lot of data and evidence. So I've been kind of in that world of heavy-duty data, science, evidence, outside of my equine ventures as well.
Talking with Dr. Jim Chiappetta, the co-founder of Flair Nasal Strips, let's talk about Flair, Doc. Can you start, I guess, by giving a quick review of how Flair works, and then we'll talk about some of the benefits.
Sure. You know, it's really simple. Horses only breathe through their nose when they're running. They can't breathe through their mouth. And as many parts of the horse, they were kind of designed by committee, and in this case, there's an area of tissue over the nasal passages of the horse that is unsupported by bone. And so when a horse breathes in, that tissue gets sucked down. And in so doing, it just narrows the nasal passage and makes it harder for them to bring air in. And all Flair does is put a little bit of support on those nasal passages so they don't collapse in. And it's nothing magical. It's a law of physics called Poiseuille's law that says if you have a flow through a tube and you open it by an increment of one, your resistance to flow goes down 16-fold. So just providing a little bit of support there helps the horse breathe easier, and particularly at a time when just the act of running hard is in fact causing the nasal passages to close down further, you know, than when they're standing still. So when you look at a horse running, not their nostrils, the area behind the nostrils, which is the narrowest part of the upper airway, that's what gets sucked in and actually closes down during intensive exercise. And all we're trying to do is help support that like any other tissue you want to support on an athlete so that it doesn't collapse down. We maintain that tube as open and viable as possible.
One of the hot-button topics in racing over the past several years has been EIPH, which is exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging, otherwise known as bleeding, and the debate over using Lasix, not using Lasix, what might alternatives be to Lasix, all of those types of things. We've heard about it ad nauseum, really, in the sport of thoroughbred racing over the past several years. How does Flair actually help with PH, Doc?
So Michigan State had done some work years ago to show that the strips reduce resistance to breathing. And if you think about a horse, when they're pulling a lot of air in, they're like a big bellows. And when that bellows opens up, they're pulling a lot of air through that hole, and that creates a lot of resistance. A guy named John West really sorted out the mechanism of action of what's going on with horses that bleed. And what West showed that it's really due to these pressure swings within the lungs. You've got a high positive pressure in the blood vessels as the blood is flowing through, and on the other side of the wall of the vessel you got a really strong vacuum pressure. And so just having those two forces on this fragile membrane cause it to rupture, and when it ruptures, that's when blood vessels escape into the airways. So it's all surrounded around this tube down in the lungs, and what Flair does is it reduces the amount of vacuum pressure. If you think of a vacuum sucking something, if you could turn the power on the vacuum a little lower so it sucks a little less, it pulls less on that wall and tears it, has less chance of it tearing. Because, as I said, on the other side of that wall, you've got a really high blood pressure because the horse's heart is beating quickly, pumping more blood. Lasix works to reduce that internal pressure in the blood vessel. So if you think of a balloon, and you're putting a whole bunch of force inside to expand the balloon, and then someone's standing outside yanking on the outside of it, at some point it's going to break. And that's what happens. And so Lasix works to reduce the pressure from the inside, and Flair works to reduce the pressure from the outside. And either alone or with Lasix, it reduces the amount of bleeding that occurs. And that membrane is really, really fragile. You know, people have talked about, well, maybe we can feed them something to make that membrane thicker and stronger. And while in theory that's a great idea, if we could do it for bleeding, the reality is the reason the horse has got the athletic capability that they do, or at least one of the reasons, is they're really efficient at moving oxygen and carbon dioxide back and forth in the body. That makes them, you know, the ability to do this is because it goes back and forth over that membrane surrounding those blood vessels. That's about 1/100th the thickness of a human hair. And you need that. And if you make it thicker, you may make it stronger so it breaks less. but you're also going to take away the other capabilities of it, which is to be able to move oxygen and carbon dioxide back and forth. So we live with this fragile balance, as we're going to do with any athlete, the elite of their game, that these horses are finely tuned. So we're trying to maintain the appropriate balance on that membrane so the blood stays in the blood vessels and not outside the into the airways, which is what occurs with bleeding.
So let's say that Lasix does indeed get phased out or continues to be phased out at more racetracks and more jurisdictions around the country. How would that impact Flair, Doc?
Well, obviously, Flair, given that there's so much research on it, it should impact Flair, positively. I think, I don't want to get into the Lasix debate, but I think we need to do some better research on what's going on. We've spent 50 years with the same drug, and we really haven't gotten any better at how we can reduce it. So, necessity is the mother of invention, and I think as we look for better solutions, it's going to cause us to look at the at what's going on down there. I think years ago, a guy named Jim Rooney, Dr. Rooney, wrote a book on the biomechanics of equine lameness, and he looked at, the physics and the mechanical aspects of what's going on in the orthopedic frame of a horse to better understand lameness. We need to do the same thing with the lungs and look at the biomechanics of the lungs and why, what's going on down there. How do we impact maybe the elasticity of these blood vessels so they're more able to withstand the pressures that they're subjected to? So I think Flair should at least sustain where it's at, or I'd hope move up with more usage, obviously. I'm in the business of selling nasal strips, but I'm also in the business of looking for things that have good science. And I think the one thing we want to be mindful of is looking at data. And as I said, I came from a background of heavy data, and that's what I look for. And I see a lot of things popping up out there. I think trainers and horsemen and veterinarians generally need to look at the data, challenge the data, and ask questions. There are... we've had a lot of research done with Flair side by side with Lasix, and a lot of these studies have been cited for the quality of the studies. And that's what we want to see, is let's learn more, let's try things, but let's really understand what's going on at the cellular level. And this is where we need to continue to fund research for, students in the veterinary world to better understand it. And I think hopefully we can come up with things, you're constantly evolving and trying to make things better for these animals the more we learn. And I'm hoping it's going to move things in that direction overall for the science. The other problem with racehorses is they're not lab rats. And I say that without being too harsh on lab rats, but these studies aren't cheap. They're very, very expensive, because for research institutions to maintain a herd of horses that we can study gets outrageous in cost. And so we have to find ways for researchers to normalize or standardize what they're doing. So even if they're only working with 10 horses here and 10 horses there, they've at least done enough standardization that we can pool those small populations into bigger populations to give us better evidence on what's going on. So, the goal is to continue to get smarter and improve what we can do with these horses to keep them healthy. And I think a lot of people are motivated now to continue to look, if we don't have Lasix to rely on for the work it's been doing in this space for years.
Well, Doc, we'll encourage people to head over to the Flair website, which is flairstrips.com, to learn more about the strips, how they work, and to place an order, too. They can do that, flairstrips.com. Appreciate the visit, and this interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. Doc, I'll let you go shovel the driveway, and appreciate the visit, my friend.
Hey, Mike, good talking to you. Have a great day.
All right, flairstrips.com, the place to go for more information on Dr. Jim Chiappetta and that really, really outstanding product that so many horsemen are using now. Going to get to another break. When I come back, it is time for my interview with Josie Carroll, the Hall of Famer going for the Triple Crown at Woodbine later this afternoon with a very talented Mighty Hart. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Racing fans, it's closing weekend at Santa Anita, so don't miss a minute of the action at santaanita.com. That's right. Our races are available live and free of charge on our website, and you can also watch and wager via firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And you can also get some great handicapping analysis at 11:50 a.m. as track announcer Frank Miramonte and host Tom Quigley cover the entire card in a fast-paced, entertaining format. Our main event on Saturday is the Grade 3, $100,000 Senator Ken Matty Stakes for fillies and mares at 5.5 furlongs on turf, and our supporting feature is the $70,000 Lure Stakes for three-year-olds and up at 1 mile on turf. On closing day Sunday, top fillies and mares will compete in the Grade 2 $200,000 Goldakova at a mile on grass, and will also have mandatory payouts in the 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot and all other exotic wagers. First post time on Saturday and Sunday is at 1 o'clock.
Discover the thrill of affordable race ownership with My Racehorse. My Racehorse features multiple horses at tracks coast to coast trained by top trainers like Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert, Steve Asmussen, and Linda Rice. My Racehorse provides you with exclusive owner updates, and all earnings are paid directly to your online account. Get started now for as little as $65 at MyRacehorse.com and the free MyRacehorse.com app. My Racehorse is offering securities only through the use of an offering circular for this part of the offering statement qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A. A copy of the offering circular may be obtained at MyRacehorse.com.
Orb, winner of the Kentucky Derby and Florida Derby. His runners have scored on both dirt and turf. His recent stakes success includes Mrs. Orb, winner of the Bay Ridge Stakes at Aqueduct, Pippin Stakes victress Whoa Nelly, and Derlou, a determined runner-up in the Grade 3 La Cañada Stakes at Santa Anita. Classic winner, classic pedigree, or standing at Claiborne Farm.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Mighty Hart kicking right back. Mighty Hart still in front. Clayton in second, running on his dotted line in behind the top four as they corner, but it's Mighty Hart in front, the one to catch in the Queen's Play, chased by Clayton, then Tecumseh's War, and behind them Curlin's Voyage, but Mighty Hart is long gone. Mighty Hart has got the Queen's Play completely wrapped up, and this is a dominant performance. Daisuke Fukumoto, Mighty Hart, full of heart, by 8 lengths. Belichick second, Clayton third, Tecumseh's War fourth, and Curlin's Voyage was fifth. 2-1-98.
Robert Geller with the call. The Queen's Plate, the Prince of Wales, both going to Mighty Hart here in 2020. And this afternoon will go into the starting gate of the Breeders' Stakes at Woodbine, looking to sweep the Triple Crown and become just the eighth Triple Crown winner in the history of Canadian racing. Mighty Hart, trained by Canadian Hall of Famer Josie Carroll, who will join me shortly. She will be our industry star of the week on this Saturday morning. This segment coming up will be presented by our friend Stuart Morris, who, as I tell you each and every week, wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. With multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, Josie Carroll is indeed an industry star, and it is an honor to have her as part of the program again this morning. She joins me from Canada on a morning that has to be a little bit different for her, going for the Triple Crown later today. Josie, good morning. Happy to have you on board.
Thank you. Good morning.
Looking forward to the big horse strutting his stuff this afternoon. When I say going for a Canadian Triple Crown or a Triple Crown, what do those words mean to Josie Carroll?
It's a very exciting day. I have to say, you know, we've been fortunate to play in a lot of nice races, but you don't often get the chance to be a contender for the Triple Crown.
How special is this horse, Josie?
You know, I can't even tell you. He just seems, the more you ask of him, the more he gives you. He just improves. And today will be a big test. You know, a mile and a half on the grass, you know, he's proved himself on synthetic. He's proved himself on dirt. And now you're going a long way on a third surface. If he can pull this off, he's a pretty extraordinary horse.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I did a poll question on our HRN Twitter feed today, and I asked people which of the Triple Crowns, the U.S. Triple Crown or the Canadian Triple Crown, is more difficult to accomplish. And I've always been of the opinion that it's the Canadian Triple Crown, because you have to win on three different surfaces. The distances are the same, but the surfaces are completely different, and that takes a very special horse, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
So would you agree that it's the Canadian Triple Crown that's harder to accomplish?
You know, I wouldn't say that. I think it's like totally different. We are, to be fair, running in a restricted race for Canadian breds. So we don't have quite as large a number of horses that may show up for the race. You know, they're obviously, the U.S. has a much larger full crop that could show up for those Triple Crowns versus our population here. But as we said, to do it on three surfaces, I don't know that any of the triple crown horses that have won all of them on the dirt would be able to do it. It's hard to say.
What gives you the confidence that Mighty Heart can handle this mile and a half turf test later today?
Pedigree says he will. He skipped over it when I worked him on it. I had him up on the E.P. Taylor course last week. He skipped over it. But truly, I don't think until you ask a horse to go a mile and a half, you really don't know if they're going to get that trip. It's, it's a true test of stamina, and yet you have to have speed. I mean, you have to have everything to accomplish this.
Yeah, his sire, Dramedy, you go back and look at his race record, he won the Elkhorn at Keeneland going a mile and a half on the turf, so that has to give you some confidence too. You talk about the pedigree, it's all there for Mighty Heart.
The pedigree's there. Now we just have to beat 11 other horses that are also nice horses trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, were you surprised to see 11 horses entered in this race against him?
You know, I actually was a little bit, but it's a great deal of money, and everybody has the right to take their shot, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Talking with Hall of Fame trainer Josie Carroll here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. She, again, trains Mighty Heart, who goes for the Triple Crown later this afternoon at Woodbine in the Breeders' Stakes, mile and a half on the turf. Josie, has this week or this morning felt any different to you coming into an opportunity like this?
Actually, this whole week has been a little different. This horse has gotten a lot of media attention. He's a great feel-good story that's sort of captured a lot of people's imagination. So we've had a lot of people showing interest in this race and this horse. So that makes it a little different.
I can remember, we broadcast American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown here on the network. We broadcast Justify winning the Triple Crown. And I can remember having conversations with Bob Baffert before those races, and he talked about going back and watching the other U.S. Triple Crown winners and how they were prepared for that final leg. And he tried to take something from each one of them that he could use with American Pharoah and Justify. Have you done anything like that? Have you gone back and watched the other seven Triple Crown winners or talked to anybody that's won the Breeders' Stakes multiple times or anything like that?
You know, interesting question. You know, certainly looked at all those horses' races. But at the end of the day, I think this is a very unique horse with a very unique style. He's a horse that's going to be either on the pace or close to the pace. I can't really make a lot of adjustments. So really have to let him run his race at the end of the day.
Josie, you didn't come from a racing family or go to the track as a child, and here you are with an opportunity to train the eighth Triple Crown winner in the history of Canadian thoroughbred racing. Could you ever imagine Josie Carroll would be in this position?
Pretty amazing, right? pretty amazing. I love this sport. I love racing, and it's just an honor to be here in this position.
Well, listen, I know it's a busy... Yeah, it really is an honor. It's an honor to talk to you every time we have the chance, and you're always so gracious with your time. Really appreciate it. I know it's a busy day for you, so I'll let you go. All the best with Mighty Heart later today. We'll be watching, and we'll be cheering.
Thank you very much.
All right, Josie Carroll here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, I mean, she did not. I remember she joined me on my trainer talk show. Gosh, it was probably maybe 5 years ago now. And at that point, she had trained 608 winners in her career, and she has now saddled well over 800, I believe. I think it's the number's like 852. Yeah, 852 according to Equibase. Multiple greatest stakes winning trainer, and now sitting here with a chance to win the Triple Crown. But she did not. She didn't come from a racing family. She didn't go to the track as a child, but she always had a passion for thoroughbreds and for horse racing. And from the time that she was very, very young, she followed racehorses and kept charts of all of their races. And that's how she first got interested in thoroughbred racing. She graduated with honors and an associate degree in equine studies from Humber College, and then worked with John Tamaro Sr. For some time, who was at the time training for the prestigious King Haven Farm, if you remember, and ended up as his assistant traveling between Florida and Canada. Well, she learned very, very well. And as somebody who didn't grow up around the sport, she has, as you just heard her say, fallen in love with it. And the native of Toronto, Canada, boy, hoping for big things later today as she looks to saddle the first Triple Crown winner in Canadian racing since Wando pulled off the feat back in 2003. And good luck to Josie. Good luck to Mighty Heart. A horse that is all heart. He has been very, very good in dominating restricted bred coming. You know, like, I asked her the question, right? Which one's more difficult to accomplish, the U.S. Triple Crown, the Canadian Triple Crown? I've always said the Canadian Triple Crown because of the, as I've talked about, because of the various surfaces that you have to compete on. But she points out, keep in mind, that it's Canadian breds only. Restricted Canadian breds, so you don't typically face the type of competition you face in the U.S. Triple Crown with horses coming from all over the country, all over the world. So that's a whole different scenario. And maybe it is a little bit of apples to oranges in some respects because of that fact, but the fact still remains you have to win three Triple Crown races on three different surfaces up in Canada, and that's what Mighty Heart will try to do later today. All right, it is time now for our monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon, and Brent Elliott is the master distiller at Four Roses, and, you know, I caught up with him not long ago, and I asked him to talk about his new Small Batch Select, which is the newest product, and they're going to roll it out in even more states coming up in 2021, but it's kind of the newest offering from Four Roses, and he talked about the regular Four Roses Small Batch, and then the Small Batch Select. Here's what Brent had to say.
Original Small Batch was launched in 2006, and really that's when we created the Small Batch platform, and that's where we go back to our library of 10 recipes and use different combinations to create truly different products. And with the original, that was four recipes, 90 proof, 6- and 7-year-old barrels that go into it. And then sometime in 2017, 2018, we saw that there was some changing demand in the market. People were looking for different types of products, and specific non-chill filtered products or higher proof products. So I thought that was a great opportunity to go ahead and expand on the small batch concept by offering a new small batch product. So what we did is we decided to do a non-chill filtered, higher proof. This is 104 proof bourbon. And to expand on the small batch concept, we went into our 10 recipes, and I selected 6 of the recipes and did a lot of test blending to try to hit just the perfect flavor profile that would both be, you know, very good and also different from our other products. And I think we've really achieved that with this one. It's very unique from the other products. It's very rich, robust. You know, being non-chill filtered and a higher proof, you get a lot more intense flavors coming through. It's a very rich, very nice bourbon.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I've been a fan of the small batch for a very long time. The original small batch, I have a bottle of it sitting on my bar right now, as a matter of fact. And the small batch select really, I always liked the small batch because I always thought it was a smooth, easy drink. I really enjoyed the flavor of it. And the small batch select was just the next step in that progression. And it was, as you said, kind of a more robust type of bourbon. And, man, I thought it was fantastic.
Appreciate you saying so.
How much trial and error was there when you were going through and trying to get the right blend, the right formula, the right flavor, the right concept when you were putting this whole thing together, Brent?
It's hard to really put a time on it because I worked on it sort of at my own pace. I took my time with it for probably the better part of a year. But it wasn't like formulating limited editions where it's, pull the barrels and I need to blend everything together and come up with a test blend within 2 months. With this, we knew it was coming. There was a lot of preparation time. So I had a lot of time to just try variations, just to see how different recipes would work together, what percentages we needed to achieve the flavor profile that ultimately became Small Batch Select.
Is this the flavor profile you thought you were going to come up with when you first started the process?
In the direction of the final flavor profile, because really one of the cornerstones of the unique flavor profile is how we utilize the F yeast strain, which out of our 5 yeast strains, that's the one that creates kind of spearminty herbal flavors. And so I had in the back of my mind for a while that that was really what we ought to utilize to set this one apart from the other products. And so every test blend was kind of based around that F yeast strain, trying to see what other yeast strains would work well with it and create new and unique flavors. So in a sense, I kind of had an idea of the direction, but it wasn't until I got in the lab and started doing all the test blends that, the blends and the learning through the process directed us to, what we landed on, which is what you tasted on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I think I said in my text it was easy to see why you were given that award as Master Distiller of the Year, and I'll echo those sentiments again. Well done with Four Roses Small Batch Select and with all the bourbons at Four Roses. And Brent will encourage people to go to fourrosesbourbon.com to learn more about everything that Four Roses offers. I really appreciate the visit again here this morning, my friend. Keep up the wonderful work, and we'll continue to be mellow and be responsible with Four Roses.
That sounds great, Mike. Thanks a lot.
When I come back, I'm going to visit with Darren Rogers, who is the Director of Communications at Churchill Downs. He'll look ahead to the fall meet, which kicks off tomorrow, right here on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
There will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He wins it in 2 minutes flat.
Only on HRRN.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
It's the 35th running of the Maryland Million Stakes at Laurel Park, Saturday, October 24th. An annual Maryland tradition. Celebrate all that is good in Maryland's thoroughbred industry with 12 stakes with more than $1 million in purses. Special post on Maryland Million Day is 11:25 a.m. Watch live on laurelpark.com or download the First Bet app and get a $10 credit and a $500 bonus with promo code SPORTOFKING. Plus, get a 10% rebate when you bet the Maryland Million with First Bet or Express Bet. Get details at first.com/bet.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6 who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home. Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War. Will Take Charge, a final man. Mucho Macho Man! He did it over Will Take Charge!
Mucho Macho Man has produced two first crop grade one winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred, Mucho Unusual, all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Edina Springs.
My name is Abel Lescanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tom Data decisively from fourth and now third and now second. And coming up on the outside as they come off the turn, Mr. Freeze has to fend off Tom Data, who's rallied to the front with 3/16 to go. Mr. Freeze is battling on, though. Major Cabby's farther back in third. Owendale trying to weave through the pack with Draft Pick. There's one furlong to go. Tom Data's got a 4-length lead at the 16th pole. Mr. Freeze trying to hold for second, but Tom Data has conquered the Clark. Wrapped up in the end to win it by 3. Tight for second. Owendale came flying late to photo with Mr. Freeze. Draft Pick was 4th.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum right here on HRRN. Mike Penna, the Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. One more segment to go before we wrap things up, and it's a big one. Turning our attention to Churchill Downs and the opening of their fall meet, which occurs tomorrow. That meet runs through November 29th. That was Travis Stone. You just heard him with the call of last year's Clark Handicap and Tom's Data for trainer Al Stahl getting the victory. He is one of the horses that figures to get some money in this year's Breeders' Cup Classic. Maybe some people would say the horse to beat in there. He's been in great form here in 2020 and would be a second Breeders' Cup Classic victory for Al Stahl after getting the victory with Blame back in 2010, who knocked off Zenyatta. The Clark is always a highlight of that fall meet. The 131st fall meet commences tomorrow, and joined now by Darren Rogers, the Director of Communications at Churchill, to preview what you can expect over the next several weeks. Darren, first of all, good morning. And by the way, I know you have a big smile on your face after your Dodgers went up 2-1 over the Rays last night.
Yep, we're up 2-1. It's been a long time between drinks, Mike, since Kurt Gibson hit that home run in 1988. But hoping this could be the year. We're just at the half-mile pole of the race, so can't get too excited, but it's nice to be in a up 2-1, and we've got Julio Urias on the bump tonight.
I saw a stat, I guess it was maybe on ESPN yesterday, where they were talking about the series, and the team that wins that third game when the series is tied 1-1 and gets that 2-1 advantage wins like 60-something percent of the World Series when that happens. So the odds are in your favor.
Odds are in the favor, but that means 40% of the time they've lost.
So, oh, come on. You're not a glass-half-empty kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm not. Look, I'm a lifelong Dodgers fan, and I'm not going to try and cry wolf like, you know, the old Cubs fans and Red Sox fans. I'm just telling you, I was a fleet-footed shortstop in high school the last time the Dodgers won the World Series, and I can just tell you that's a long time ago.
Well, that series, I guess, continues tonight. Is that right? Game number 4 tonight?
Yes, it does. Yep.
Yeah, you said, okay. Yep. All right, well, that happens tonight, so you'll be up late watching that game, but tomorrow we get a chance to get up early and tackle the 131st fall meet at Churchill Downs, which figures to get off to a rousing beginning with the first of two Stars of Tomorrow programs. 11 races tomorrow, all for two-year-olds, first post 1 p.m. That is such a great concept, Darren, and I know it's really caught on with horsemen.
Yeah, this is the 16th year that Churchill Downs has hosted this, and you know, of course, we have one on opening day tomorrow, and then we have one at the tail end of the meet. But, you know, Stars of Tomorrow, you know, started in 2005, and it's helped launch the careers, you know, of numerous graded stakes winners. But it's been more than 50 future grade one winners. You've had the, you know, the Horse of the Year champions, Gunrunner, Rachel Alexandra, 2010 Derby winner, Super Saver. You've had a trio of Kentucky Oaks winners emerge from there. Rachel Alexandra, Believe You Can, Monomoy Girl, a trio of Preakness winners was added this year. With he had Shackelford, War of Will, and then Swiss Skydiver, and then a couple of Belmont winners as well. Creator, and you remember Tis the Law, finished third in last year's Kentucky Jockey Club. So it's really produced, it lives up to its name. Stars of Tomorrow, and we love it. We have 11 races tomorrow. There's an average field size of more than nearly 9.5 horses a race. So should be some excellent betting on Sunday for the first of 24 days.
Yeah, it's going to be a great card, and it's always a fun meet. It's a different type of meet than we're used to seeing in the spring when all the attention is on the Kentucky Oaks and the Kentucky Derby, and that seems to be, well, let's just put it this way. I think the fall meet tends to be a little more laid back, much like Keeneland's fall meet is more laid back than their spring meet. It's kind of the same concept, isn't it?
It is, and I'm with you. Like, I've really, really enjoyed the racing because you have a lot of the two-year-olds, and obviously with the COVID-19 pandemic, I think it's safe to say that a lot of the juveniles this year are even behind schedule just a bit. And yeah, we're going to see a lot of, promising two-year-olds uncorked at the meet. You have horses that are seeking, end of the year, maybe graded stakes glory. We have 10 stakes races, worth $1.8 million over the course of the 5 weeks. And then you have, some horses that have been freshened up. They're preparing for maybe winter campaigns down at Gulfstream Park, Oaklawn Park, Fairgrounds, etc. A Turfway Park too this year, with the installation and the improvements of the Tapeta up there. You're going to see a lot of Kentucky horsemen sticking around here in the wintertime. So yeah, it's such a tremendous meet. Bettors love it. You have some competitive full fields, typically with less competition around the rest of the country. There's more horses that are coming in, and we'll average nearly 9 horses a race if the recent past is any indication.
Yeah, and speaking of fans, tomorrow will mark the first time this year that spectators can return to Churchill Downs for live racing. It will be in a limited capacity. Tell me more about that. That's exciting news.
Yeah, we're looking forward to this, Mike. We're going to continue at Churchill Downs to follow the COVID-19, health and safety protocols for venues and events that's been mandated by the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And, people ask me, well, how many people are you going to allow in? Well, what you need to know in advance, with the cooler weather, this time of year, last year's average daily attendance during the fall meet at Churchill Downs is about 4,200 guests. And we're going to expect much less than that. I think it's safe to say we'd be thrilled if we could meet half of that. The demand's not there. You look at other sporting events. Some people don't want to come out still, but there are others that are itching to get back to the racetrack. And we have successfully, during the tail end of the spring meet, obviously during the September meet, we had participants with owners on hand. We want to start welcoming back some of the guests. And as you know, as we were leading up to Kentucky Derby 146, we were prepared to host a crowd of up to 23,000 people. But taking a look at the numbers with Kentucky and in speaking with the governor's office, we just felt it was best to pull back on that. So we're ready now at a much lower capacity. We're going to have some of the select rooms on the clubhouse side open, the Turf Club, the Roses Lounge, the Stakes Room as well. Everything is going to be, totally socially distanced, limiting those indoor premium areas with the proper social distancing at the limited capacity per the state's requirements for venue and event spaces. So we're not selling general admission. You will, if you plan to come out to Churchill Downs, you can go on to churchilldowns.com, click on tickets, or you could walk up to one of the box office gates. We are going to sell first floor box seats at general admission pricing for just $5. That way we can, you know, capture a name and number for each individual that's on the property. And by the way, the masks are mandated throughout. Obviously, you can remove it if you're eating or drinking. And we'll have a medical questionnaire and then take a temperature check for everybody that comes through the facility. But we're looking forward to having some folks back. And I think, you know, the whole racing industry, I think I could speak for all the tracks that have been up and running. This is it's just been unique. It's been strange not hearing crowds. And it'll be nice to hear people again as the horses come down the stretch, to hear some people cheering, rooting, clapping for the winners as they return back on the gallop back to the winner's circle. I think I know we've missed it as, you know, track operators. I'm confident the jockeys and the trainers and the owners have felt the same. So we're looking to get back to a little bit of normalcy, but in a responsible fashion.
Yeah, amen to that. How about concessions, betting windows, those types of things, Darren? Will there be some that will be open or none at all?
Yeah, no, we're gonna open up the second floor clubhouse concessions.
Okay.
We'll also have some dining as well. The betting windows will be open. They'll be spaced apart. Again, we don't expect, you know, a big crowd. I think a couple thousand people, and even everybody asked about Thanksgiving Day. I can tell you our ticketing department, you know, has reached out to a number of the customers, the box seat holders, the turf club members. What are their intentions? And you get a pretty good idea. The demand really isn't there. And I think that's not just unique to horse racing. That's in any sporting event that's existing right now, even the college football stadiums. You know, if you see a football stadium that says they permitted up to 12,000 fans, they're scratching and clawing to get to those 12,000 fans, amazingly, because the demand just isn't there yet with where we are with the pandemic.
Talking with Darren Rogers, the Director of Communications at Churchill Downs. Of course, the fall meet begins tomorrow, runs all the way through the end of November. November 29th will be the final racing, Wednesday through Sunday. And the 24-day stand should be extremely popular with bettors and with horsemen alike. Darren, we talked about the Stars of Tomorrow programs, the first one coming up on Sunday. The next one will be later in November with the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the Goldenrod, both of those grade twos on that program on November 28th. Black Friday, you have the grade one Clark, which is presented by Norton Healthcare. That's on November 27th. And that's always a popular event, of course, being a grade one and being such a prominent historic race. Anything else that we're missing here? Any other highlights that people should know about with this meet?
Well, I think most importantly right now, they should know that we're continuing to partner with the New York Racing Association, and they'll be able to watch every race every day on Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports 2, America's Day at the Races. They do such a tremendous job. Sunday's opener will be on FS2 starting at 12:30. It's been a great partnership. The programming's really good. It's nice to see the racing in high definition. And for those folks that either can't make it out or they're at home, they enjoy watching, going to a sports bar, watching, you know, college football, maybe the NFL. Don't be afraid to have them turn on the channel as well, because I know I've been doing that in the off season, and I think it makes a great way to showcase the sport. They really do a good job.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. They do a great job over there, and glad to see that Churchill continues to partner with them, and we'll have the product out there. Listen, man, enjoy the World Series, enjoy that fall meet, and as always, greatly appreciate you taking the time to spend a few minutes with me here this morning.
Mike, it's always great to talk to you. Best to you and the family, and good luck to all the listeners out there.
All right, stay safe and healthy. That's Darren Rogers here on HRRN. And like all of our guests that appear on the program, this interview is brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by going to EmbraceTheRace.com. And had a chance to visit with Mike Dianzaris from Embrace the Race on the phone yesterday, and he is very thankful to each and every one of you who have taken the time to support them through the pandemic. The online sales have been very strong, and there are so many racing fans that are taking our advice and heading over there to EmbraceTheRace.com to purchase a gift or something for yourself or maybe something for the racing fan on your list. And the product, as I've told you from day one, is second to none, and the logo, the messaging, the branding of Embrace the Race is second to none. And if you're a horse racing fan, it is the place to shop. So head over there now, embracetherace.com, let them know that you are a fan of this sport and that this is what you love. And embrace what you love at embracetherace.com. Going to get to another break. I'll come back and wrap this one up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Cara Conti has won.
Passion.
It's Cara Conti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Cara Conti and O'Dor. Cara Conti.
Gainsway Stallion Cara Conti, a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5. Cara Conti hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Cara Conti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Sole Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Catil, and Great Winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream. Value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Cara Conti at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Don't forget, you won't want to miss the October 24th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. Features include leading lady Shannon Arvin taking the helm as the first Keeneland first female president at Keeneland, Right Approach, Right Mentor, with Julie Crone as agent, hardworking jockey Farron Peterson finds success, and Making Some Noise, soft-spoken Mark Glatt finding success at the sales and on the track. And then Evan Hammonds has a feature, What's Going On Here? Yearling Sale Results and COVID-19 Concerns Exerting Pressure on Stud Fees. That's all by Evan Hammonds at Blood Horse. Download a copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play, or go to shop.bloodhorse.com and don't miss their fall special going on right now. 10 weekly issues for only $10. Go to bloodhorse.com/fall20 to take advantage of that offer. Well, my thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible this morning. Owner Dan Mason kicked it off at 8:15 Eastern. Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron was here to look back on Tisnow's tremendous wins in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then he spent time looking at his other wins. Chris, a 5-time winner of the Classic that is tied for most in the history of the sport. He did that with me in the first half of the show. Dr. Jim Chiapetta from Flair Strips. Josie Carroll, going for the Triple Crown today with Mighty Heart up in Canada at Woodbine. Good luck to her. And Darren Rogers a short time ago from Churchill Downs previewing the upcoming fall meet. Well, if you missed any portion of the show, simply go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this show and all of our programs. And my thanks to everyone who took time to weigh in on the poll question this morning. 66% of you saying it's more difficult to win the U.S. Triple Crown than the Canadian Triple Crown. Interesting. Well, for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Pena. Big one tomorrow. Steelers, Titans, go Steelers.